T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show coming to you live on this Friday evening as NBA Eastern Conference Finals rolling along. That's the only thing we've got left to settle before we get to the NBA Finals. And, of course, it should be a busy offseason for the Atlanta Hawks. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Let's talk to Ben Ladner, basketball writer for Fansided.com. You can follow him on his personal Twitter page, at B. Ladner. Ben, thanks a lot for a few minutes with us here in Atlanta this evening.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So I want to start with this first. You wrote an article way back when, in right near Christmas time of last year, about Kevin Huerter. And I want to ask you, because obviously Huerter playing here in Atlanta for all these years and then got traded, I think because of really luxury tax reasons was the only reason that they got rid of Huerter. But that being said, what do you think the biggest difference was for Kevin Huerter in Sacramento, where he kind of thrived this year, versus what we had seen in Atlanta?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it kind of gets to like a philosophical difference between the Kings and the Hawks and just the way they play offense. And then also kind of ties in with the direction that offense seems to be moving league-wide right now, just in kind of the era of NBA basketball that we're in. I think a lot of it was just youngish player getting older, adding skills, improving his game, kind of the natural progression that you see from a lot of young NBA players. But I think a lot of it too was also playing in a Kings system that wasn't as heavily predicated on spread pick and roll, you know, high ball screens revolving around one guy. And it was a more kind of inclusive, egalitarian offense that was built around these concepts of ball and player movement that allowed the players to improvise and really play freely within the system. And for a player like Kevin Huerter, you know, around Trae Young, he's useful. He helps you as a spot-up shooter. He can hit a catch-and-shoot three. But there's a lot more to his game as a playmaker, as a passer, ball handler, as a movement shooter, someone you can bring around screens and use to kind of pull the defense, use his gravity to open up opportunities for others in the offense. And so I think in Atlanta, that just wasn't really being used to the fullest extent because of how much Trae Young dominates the ball and how efficient he is as a ball-dominant player. It just made sense for the Hawks to run their offense kind of exclusively almost through him. But when you move him to Sacramento, you put him into this system, a lot more free-flowing, a lot more threats within the offense, and I think they really empowered him to shoot more off the move, shoot more off the dribble, make more plays as a ball handler. And so I think just playing in a more kind of decentralized offense really allowed a lot of his skills that we didn't get to see in Atlanta really blossom in Sacramento.
Ben, let's switch over to the Eastern Conference Finals. We obviously saw Boston win again last night. You know, I know nobody has ever come back from an, you know, 0-3 deficit, and it's never happened in NBA history, and I think it's only happened one time in Major League Baseball and this, that, and the other. So we know about all of that. But that being said, that win last night, this feels, for whatever reason, and maybe it's just perceived, maybe it's not really truth, this feels like an entire new series now. This feels like now all of a sudden we're in a series, even though Miami is still up 3-2.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's hard to tell sometimes with these blowout wins, you know, how much of it is a team really figuring something out versus just getting hot on the right night and making a lot of shots. I would probably have to watch last night's game again to really figure out what it was in this case for Boston. I do think they figured some things out, though, particularly with their ball movement on offense. I think they're doing a better job than they did in those first three games, you know, penetrating the defense, driving kicks, swinging the ball, and creating open shots that way and not relying as much on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown just to create one-on-one. And then I really thought as well in games 4 and 5, Boston's ball pressure against Miami was a lot better. They were just more tenacious, more physical, getting up into the ball, trying to make life difficult on those Heat ball handlers. And what we found out from that, I think, is that beyond Jimmy Butler, there aren't a ton of guys on this Miami roster that can create off the dribble and really create their own shot or even compromise the defense in a way that's going to open up one of those drive and kick ball movement swing opportunities to create like a catch and shoot three or something like that. So it put a lot of offensive responsibility on Jimmy Butler, forced him to really be the only catalyst for Miami. And I think as the series goes on, the more you ask someone to carry that heavy of a weight offensively, the harder it's going to become. So I think Boston has figured some things out. The question now, you know, is just, can they sustain this level of play? Can they suppress Miami for this long and win 4 games in a row? That's really tough to do. Even if Boston is the better team in the series from here on out, it's just, you know, the margin of error at this point obviously is so slim. They can't afford to lose even 1 game that it's just hard to sustain that for the rest of the series. But, you know, in the era that we're in, Boston's a really good team. Miami, obviously, an 8 seed. So by that measure, 2 versus 8, you would think that Boston's the better team. And I think in the era of parity that we're in right now in the NBA, this kind of feels like the year that if something like this is going to happen, this is kind of the year that it would happen because of all the upsets we've seen, all the parity that we see across the league.
Basketball writer for Fansided.com, Ben Ladner, joining me here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. So you mentioned Jaylen Brown, and I am fascinated, and I mean fascinated, with the hope or wish, and I know it's pie in the sky, and I know it's, you know, unicorns and fairy tales and things like that, about the idea of the Hawks getting in the mix for Jaylen Brown. So two parts to this question. Number one, do you think the Celtics are willing to give him that supermax deal that's about $290? And number two is, if he is going to move, is it best to do it during the summertime, or do you wait until closer to the trade deadline?
The first question, that's the really fascinating one to me. I think, you know, Boston, I personally do not think Jaylen Brown would be worth that supermax extension that he's eligible for. My bet would be that Boston does give it to him, both because he's a really good player who I think, as we're seeing in both in this playoffs and in last year's playoffs, is just highly resilient and just someone that you want to have on your team in the highest levels of the playoffs. Like, there's no part of his game that really gets exposed the deeper and deeper you go in the postseason. And that's a real asset to any team in the league. So having that, plus the fact that they don't really have a great way to replace him if he does leave, I'm tempted to say that they're going to keep him around. But, you know, if Boston ends up losing this series, if next year doesn't necessarily go the way they plan for it to go, this Brown-Tatum core has been together a long time. I think it's worth keeping together, but I wonder from Boston's perspective if they start to think, we've run it back with roughly the same group so many years in a row, does something need to change? And maybe Jaylen Brown is their best asset that they can get something in return for. And that's where I think a team like the Hawks should try to get into that market. It's going to be tough with the contracts Atlanta already has on its books, but when you look at this roster, to me, that's, you know, the three, kind of that big wing two-way player, that's exactly the hole that they need filled on this team right now. So if Jaylen Brown is available at some point down the line, you know, the contract is going to be something to consider. You got to be mindful of that as you take it on, because this is going to be an expensive team. And, you know, maybe we'll talk in a little bit about whether this team's going to pay the luxury tax. They haven't really done that historically, so you start to get a little nervous about what the financials of that team might look like. But, you know, local kid coming back home, really good player. You can see how that would work for both sides. It's just a question of whether Boston is willing to even make that a conversation.
Well, let's talk about it, Ben. I mean, look, this squad, you know, Tony Ressler has said, as the owner of the Hawks, that, well, we'll go in the luxury tax when it makes sense and this, that, and the other. And I understand that. And I really do. I don't think you just go willy-nilly in the luxury tax just because you can spend money. But you're not, at this point, they're in the luxury tax as it is. And you're not going to get a better roster unless you start going into it. I mean, you can't sign guys for big money contracts of your own players and then avoid the luxury tax unless you're going to do the Kevin Huerter deal. So I don't even know how it's possible that we can get better and still continue to avoid the luxury tax coming up this season?
I think you put it well. Yeah, and the question with these types of teams, and this is a real challenge with where the Hawks are right now, just in the life cycle of the Trae Young era. You know, they're a good team. They're decent. They played really well against the Heat. They showed some signs against Boston, even in defeat. You can see how this could be a really high-level offensive team, especially in the regular season. And if you put just enough defense around it, maybe you make yourself, you know, maybe you catch what the Knicks caught this year and turn into that kind of team, a team that can really be a candidate to get to the second round and potentially beyond. And depending on how the league shapes up, and I talked about the parity earlier, if that continues, maybe you put yourself in kind of that second or third tier in the Eastern Conference. But on the other hand, you look at the Hawks' statistical profile from last year and also some of the struggles they had in the postseason, and you could just as easily make the argument that this is kind of an average team. And is an average team worth going into the luxury tax, deep into the luxury tax for? Like you said, that's not something you do lightly just because you can do it. I think it does need to be worth the money that you're spending. And so it's hard. The Hawks are almost stuck here where you're right that the way they get better is to go deeper in the luxury tax, but it's also hard to see the move that they could make, even if they are going into the luxury tax, that would substantially upgrade this roster, unless like a Jaylen Brown, like you mentioned, or someone of that caliber all of a sudden becomes available either in the offseason or next year. So I think we're going to have to see kind of what the chessboard looks like and how that changes over the coming months. My general rule when owners say they're willing to go into the luxury tax and really shell out for a team is to believe it when I see it. And that doesn't just go for Tony Ressler, who has said that for several years. It goes for any NBA owner who is talking about the luxury tax. Many of them are kind of notoriously stingy when it comes to that. And even in the Hawks case, we've seen some moves that, you know, suggest kind of some cost cutting at the expense of roster quality. So I think it just kind of depends on how the situation evolves, which players are available. And if there's a move that the Hawks feel like is really worth going in for, that, okay, if we add this player, it's going to take us X amount of money into the luxury tax, but it's going to make us a championship team, I think that's certainly worth doing. But if that move's not there, then the question kind of becomes, what is it worth going into the luxury tax if you're only going to be an average or slightly above average team?
Last question for you, Ben. We're joined by Ben Ladner on the WaitForIt.com hotline, basketball writer for Fansided.com. Is whoever comes out of the East, is this has been a hard-fought series. I mean, no matter what ends up happening here moving forward, is that an advantage for Denver? Is it a disadvantage because they've had so much of a layoff? I mean, where does Denver fit into all of this just as far as are they rusty? Are they, you know, rested up and ready to go and this was a good thing for them? I mean, how do you see all of that on Denver's side of things?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's hard to tell. My instinct is to say that Denver's going to be ready for whoever they face in game one. They've been the most impressive team in the playoffs to me so far this postseason. I mean, they made obviously very quick work of the Lakers, and I think showed some signs in that series of a team that's really resilient, that's really mentally tough, physically tough, versatile, deep, and obviously they have arguably the best player in the world right now in Nikola Jokic. And just the way all of those pieces fit together, I think they've figured out a lot defensively this year. So I think for them, having the time off probably benefits them, not only because they get the rest, but it also allows them to game plan, get a larger sample of film on Miami and Boston. So regardless of who they face, they have a lot of tape to go through and they can really get a good sense of what the opponent's going to throw at them. And, you know, they did this at the end of the regular season. They kind of coasted through the finish line. And then as soon as the playoffs start, they kick it into gear and they look like the best team in the NBA. So that would be what I would bet on going into the finals. But like you say, it is possible coming off a 7-game series, if a team, especially like Miami, I think we saw this in the bubble where it was almost a snowball effect that once they beat the Bucks, they just kind of, they rolled into each series using the momentum of the last. And by the time they got to the finals, they were really clicking on all cylinders until injuries derailed them a little bit. So I think whatever team makes it, as long as everyone's healthy, it's going to be a really high-level competitive series. But I think Denver will be ready for whatever either team throws at them.
Ben Ladner, he's basketball writer for Fansided.com. Join me on the WaitForIt.com hotline. You can follow him on his personal Twitter page, at B Ladner. Ben, appreciate the time this evening here. Thanks for a few minutes with us.
Absolutely, John. Thanks for having me.
You got it. John Chuckery. We'll be back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.